So anyway, welcome to our board meeting this evening. It's good to have you here. We kind of have a full agenda, so we'll do the formalities. Anybody have a comment or a motion on the minutes? And if we could actually approve the agenda at the same time, it'd be nice. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes from last meeting and the agenda for this evening's meeting?
I move we approve the minutes and the agenda for this evening.
We have a motion from Jeannie. We have a second from Roger. Any questions on that? Discussion, corrections on the minutes? All in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Thank you. And next meeting, Todd is listed, will be September 27th. And we're trying to move around just a little bit. We had a great meeting in Hiram a couple months ago, and now Hyde Park City Hall for our September meeting, if that works.
And it's in the basement of the City Hall.
Okay. And questions and comments from or for management and board? Anything there? I'll mention two quick items. I was at some meetings in Salt Lake at the Capitol today, and I heard some really positive compliments for Todd Bueller, our general manager. Wanted to pass them on. It happened a while back, but Todd was asked to help with Uinta Basin, a little transit system they have out there, Roosevelt, Vernal, that part of our state, and my counterpart out there, when I mentioned I serve on this board, said, "Oh, Todd, your general manager is amazing." Todd Bueller was so helpful, so knowledgeable, and really helped those folks get their system up and running. So
and
I just wanted to pass that on to the board.
There.
Pardon me?
You said no, he cannot move there, right?
Yeah, no.
No intentions at this point.
You know, even people that live there aren't crazy about it. Including my counterpart that lives there, who's lived there all her life. So she probably wouldn't mind me sharing that. And then also another little interesting item, a person close to the transportation system of the state mentioned that there's serious talk among some legislators about the legislature in this next session exerting control over Utah Transit Authority. And there are only two transit districts in the state of Utah, organized districts, UTA and Cache Valley Transit. Cache Valley Transit was not mentioned in the discussion at all, but there's been concern by many legislators for some time about Utah Transit. And so I just thought that was interesting. Todd's heard that rumor and knows a little more. What is speculation at this point that some legislators, do you want to just mention a rumor?
So, well, it's maybe, yeah, I guess a rumor. So the last legislative session, the legislature created a task force, a transportation task force, to really look at transportation issues for the next 15, 20 years, and how do we deal with those. And so they've created this big group, and I really compliment them on the fact they have private business people there, they have the chamber, they have several entities, MPOs, transit agencies. And so I've been attending those meetings, and some of them are very early in the morning and whatnot, but it's important, I think, that we're there, we understand what's going on. And the focus is really the Wasatch Front initially, and then it would bleed throughout the state. And so in this last meeting that we just had on Tuesday, I guess that was yesterday, then the senator that's the co-chair was talking about governance and how do we do things. And so they were talking about the existing system, which is that you have UDOT and then you have UTA. And they said, well, what if we modify that a little bit? And they've been modifying the UTA board for several years. They've added new people to that. And they said, well, maybe we modify it further and we put more state representation on there. And as we discussed that for about 40 minutes, then finally the senator made it clear, we're not looking at either of those. And he put up two other alternatives. And the first one being that there's a transportation secretary that's created that UDOT and UTA would report to, so it would be they would both report there. And then the second model was a transportation secretary that UDOT would report to, and then transit would be 100% contracted out. And so I am going to provide comments or asking for comments. I do want to give them my perspective on the benefits and then the negatives about contracting everything out. I think there's some good and bad and whatnot. But so that's where the rumor came from. It's in this meeting. And again, this is a working group, and they're coming back to present ideas to the legislature. So I still think there's some work yet to be done. Whether that happens, I don't know. So but that's, is that enough?
Sure. Any other interesting rumors people want to tell us about?
I will say one thing that we're also looking at funding, not just governance, but funding. And one of the things that they're talking about, what I do think is good, is how do we make the funding more flexible so that it's not just this money has to go to roads or this money has to go to transit, but this money can go to a project. And that project could be transit or roads, and we can mix money, and how do we do that? And I think that's smart. I mean, I think that there's that we need to look at the transportation system as a whole.
They are certainly implying a lot more cooperation than it currently exists, because if you have road money, man, you want to use it for roads.
Yeah.
And you have transit money, you want to use it for transit.
Yeah.
So I think that there's going to have to be a lot of cooperative spirit involved.
Well, I will say that when the bomb was dropped, then there was a lot of quietness in the room for a long time. But I do think that everyone involved really does want to work for solutions, and we've got to look at things differently than we have. So.
Well, I think it's careful. I think they have to carefully define the problem.
That is actually one of the things we all talked about it.
Right, because
that hasn't been clearly defined.
You can't apply a solution to something that hasn't been clearly defined.
You're actually right on target with where we're headed. So. But it is important, I think, that we're involved in that process. Even
Absolutely.
Though it is focused mainly on the Wasatch Front right now, I think I recognize that eventually will filter this way. We need to have a voice in that. And so, you know, if any time any of you want to accompany me, I'm happy to give you the information and let you be involved as you want to. So.
I can just suggest that maybe the problem the legislators have seen over the years is lack of control, lack of accountability from the Board of Trustees at Utah Transit Authority. You know, that's the impression I get. And I think nobody would have that impression here. We have a very small but very tightly run system, excellent management, excellent board members, a lot of oversight, a lot of accountability. So I think we're fine.
But I think as a state, we need to be careful not to apply a hammer to a problem that doesn't require a hammer.
Yeah, I agree.
That's
I agree.
A great point, because I will say, of all the states in the union, this state does actually do it better. And we know that. We've seen that again and again, that other states are coming to model. Like anything, we have things to improve on. But I think that's a very valid point, Jeannie, that we just need to be careful. And we need to make sure we're looking at unintended consequences and really. But,
yeah.
But I think there's good people involved, and wisdom will prevail.
Thank you. Let's move on to item number 6, report on our 25-year celebration. Craig.
Sorry I'm late, folks. Anybody that works on or lives around campus knows the students are coming back. Things are a little crazy.
They're downtown.
Yes. I apologize for showing up so late. So the PEP committee has been working with Todd and his team on the 25-year celebration, which is this week. Here it is. Friday, 12 o'clock, if you folks would, hopefully all of you can make it, slip out.
Could we have a show of hands? How many have RSVP'd or will right now that they'll be there?
Oh, I didn't know I had to.
You don't need to RSVP. What, you haven't?
Eric, you're coming?
Oh, I just said I didn't RSVP, I didn't
know. Oh, okay, well, this, we'll
None
call this We'll call this it. This is the RSVP.
So, we're really excited about the program. Todd and his team, Sharice, have done a great job putting together a wonderful booklet that we can provide for everyone. We're going to have a short agenda. Roger's going to lead us off with some comments, get things kicked off, and we'll have a short visit with Noelle Cockett, president of Utah State University. She'll address the crowd for a few minutes, and then Todd's team has put together a great video. I think you'll really enjoy it.
We're going to watch it tonight.
We're going to watch it tonight. Great, because I think it's good stuff. It really, really shows the people, the connection with people here in Cache Valley. I think it does a great job of sending the message that this is a key part of Cache Valley's culture. I'm really excited about it. Then after that, Congressman Bishop will spend a few minutes visiting with everyone. then we'll wrap it up. Don't forget, don't eat before you come. A wonderful lunch provided.
The location?
Riverwoods Conference Center.
Okay, any questions on that? Did you want to show the video now?
Do you want to show it now?
Yeah, that'd be great.
It's up to you. Okay. It's related. So, Roger had a question.
Any idea of how big a crowd you might expect?
Well, Todd's got a pretty good list. He came with a list for us to consider, and there's a pretty good list of partners throughout the valley. We've asked for at least a couple of members from each of the entities that's represented by CBTD. Then there's also members of the media, so we'll have a number of media representatives there, I hope. They've been invited. So then a lot of our partners with Todd, maybe you could give us...
Just some partner agencies such as Options, Cash Employment and Training, the university, but then also some of the big businesses like Maloof and Vivint, stuff like that, we've also asked to come. So hopefully if it's everyone comes that we kind of invited, we have 100 and 110 people there. But we'll see. You never know.
Okay.
We're good.
Run the video. There she is. All right, Sue.
System as Cache Valley Transit operating in our valley and serving our people. We got a class from USU to do a survey in the community to see what interest there was for having a system, just a local system. And we also asked the question of if you were in favor of that, would you also be in favor of having a quarter cent sales tax to fund it? The response was overwhelming. And we were heartened by that, so we asked the municipal council in Logan to put that on the ballot the next November. That passed overwhelmingly. And so the Logan Transit District LTD was created, and I just think the transit system is a crown jewel in Cache Valley. We've had a lot of success, and I think most people are proud of their buses that you're able to hop on, hop off. But I just think there are a number of people that cannot drive, number of people that can't afford a car. There's the elderly, that some of those maybe shouldn't be driving. There are the students who yet aren't driving, or there's a parking issue like at USU. There are those that are just environmentally sensitive that would rather ride the bus than to drive an extra vehicle on the roads. And so for all of those people, I just think we provide a service.
Hi, I'm Sheriff Chad Jensen with the Cache County Sheriff's Office. We have a great relationship and partnership with the Cache Valley Transit District, not only with our agency, but with the community as well. With the security measures they have on the buses as well as the transit facility, we have a very high clearance rate of issues and problems and crimes reported to our on-staff deputy who is assigned to the Cache Valley Transit District. We very much appreciate the relationship that we have with the Cache Valley Transit District, their drivers and their staff, and appreciate the public service and the safe public service they provide to the citizens of Cache County.
We work with people with disabilities, and our mission is to help them to work and live and be as independent as they can possibly be. And the Cache Valley Transit System is such a great partner in helping us do that, because the majority of people with disabilities that we work with are unable to drive and need transportation to get to their destination. Some people can go as individuals. They learn the system, they can transfer buses and get to where they need to go. Other individuals need a staff member to go with them to help with that transfer on the buses. We have some people who need to use the CallerRide system. That system actually picks them up at their curb, brings them curb to curb, either here to cash employment or to the various appointments they need to go to in the community. They couldn't get to these places without the Cache Valley Transit. It's such a valuable partnership that we have with them.
Hi, I'm Jay Carlson. My wife Diane and I are the parents of David Carlson, who is a constant frequent rider with the Cache Valley Transit District. He's a special needs client of the Cache Education and Training Center. He's employed at McDonald's in Smithfield, and he rides the bus every day.
I'm Paige Hobbs from the Smithfield McDonald's, and I have the luxury of working with David, and he is our sunshine to the day. He is our upbeat person who keeps our lobby clean, helps our customers, and is just generally like one of the best things that happens here at our store. Honestly, if he didn't have the bus, I don't think he'd be able to work clear as far away. On the days that he doesn't have the bus, it's harder on him. It's what gets him here, and we're grateful for it, because if he wasn't here, our store would not quite be the same.
Being able to have him ride on the Cache Valley Transit District system has been a major benefit to him in helping him become more independent, to be able to make friends, to be able to earn money, to be self-sufficient in many ways. It has been a great experience. We have nothing but the highest regard for the drivers and all of the personnel of the CVTD, and really want to express our appreciation for them.
My granddaughter graduated in art, and she's an artist in Crewe. She will be up here for Summerfest. He says, come on, let's go. You know, you had the graduation. And all my son all pulled out his check. How much is it? Oh, it's free. It's free. Just get on. He never made it. We got on a bus and we're just driving through the left. And I don't drive anymore, and I can. I still have a driver's license, but it was more for ID. So the bus is wonderful for me.
I think it's a great benefit to have a fair, free bus service. If I wasn't working, for example, and a person with a disability, I would probably be on state and federal assistance of some kind. It liberates me. Where I use a power wheelchair, every bus is accessible. Well, I go about anywhere in town that I need to get to. I use it a lot for work meetings, shopping, going to the bank, that type of thing, as well as to and from Preston, Idaho for work.
I started riding when it was LTD, and way back, a couple of decades ago. We had a family vehicle that had some maintenance problems and took it into have it repaired, and at that time I started riding the bus out of necessity. I found out how easy and convenient it was to get the bus where I needed to go, whether it was to work or shopping or any place else in town, and started riding it on a regular basis and have been riding it ever since. I am what they call a rider of choice.
The biggest benefit for the is to be able to help those that really need to be able to use it. It's nice to be able to save a little bit of money, to be able to ride into town to go to work or commute. But the real benefits for those people who really need it, and they need an extra dime, and they don't have to put out a dollar to drive into Logan every day. They go in there $2 or $3, however much gas is, plus the cost of the vehicle and insurance. And it's made it so that people can really utilize that bus service, the ones that are really needed.
It's heartening to talk to some of those people. And being able to move around is something that's critical for a lot of people, to be able to go buy groceries, to be able to go
see your grandkids or, you know, go to school or whatever. That's great that we provide that service. And I think over the past 25 years, we've done a pretty darn good job doing it.
Well, Charisse, good job, except that first guy I worry about. Anyway, thank you very much. So you plan to show that on Friday?
Yeah.
Okay. Any comments or questions or anything related to that? Let's go on to agenda item 7 then. Glenda's going to talk to us about our second quarter financials.
Okay, I hope everyone's had a chance to look at their reports. I'm not really going to go into much detail since everything's here. You'll notice that there is a lot more detail on the report, so you should be able to see some of the more descriptive items here rather than summaries. And just like to point out, you know, that it shows half a year's lapse. That's why we have percent of the year lapse is 50%, so you can just have kind of an idea comparing the year. Budgets don't have to run exactly on that 50%, but that's just kind of a benchmark to look at. And things are running as expected as far as I know. There are some notes there, you'll see some footnotes that describe some of the items there to give more explanation. And so I'd refer you to those. I haven't heard any word of anything of concern. Todd, have you got anything? So I think everything thus far has been according to plan. So I would invite you to look at that and consider that. If you have looked at that and have any questions, you're welcome to bring those up.
Any questions or comments? We need a motion to receive the report. Is that correct? So
I make a motion.
We have a motion.
I'll second it.
By Rich to receive. Second by Jeannie. Any questions or comments? We'll proceed to vote. All in favor of receiving that report, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Hey, Roger.
Yes.
Just one comment on this. I think it's important that board members know that we can go online and get the detail beyond this if that's what we want to get. And I think it's important for our oversight, you know, that this added detail that staff has provided, it's really good for us to understand it and see it and ask questions if we need to. So we appreciate their effort.
If you have questions, we'll definitely answer.
Thank you very much. Next item is Sean, short range transit plan.
Yes, LSC and Associates has completed it, and AT Starter is going to give us a little presentation, kind of a synopsis. And then after that, we'll make a motion to approve that the plan is completed.
Or receive the plan rather than approve, right?
Sure.
Except, yeah. Okay.
We'll go into that little discussion after.
All righty, fine. Yeah. AT, it's a pleasure to have you here, sir, again.
Great. Good evening. It's good to be here. I'm going to step off the side so you can see the slides. And we have put together the draft plan. I think, like, with the financial report, there's a lot of detail in here. I promise not to go into most of the detail. I'm going to just hit highlights of what the recommended changes are for you to look at. So in terms of just an overview, again, just a little bit, again, on the process, not going into a lot of detail, but highlights of that, and then what we have recommended, and then answer any questions or discussions you may have. So in terms of the study process, just things to highlight, we did a lot of community outreach, and I think had a lot of community participation, far more than we typically see in local transit plans. And just to show the numbers in the community survey, we had over 300,000 responses there. The onboard survey, we were just under 3,000 responses from people. As we went out the community, we had a stakeholder meeting. We did hold community meetings. The one that was most effective was an open house at the transit center. The other communities not as well attended, but again, a lot of participation through our other outreach efforts. We did have the steering committee involved, and then as we put together the options and evaluated those, we put those out to the community, and you can see down at the bottom there we had almost 950 responses, and then we went through that process again with the draft short-range plan, and we had 150 responses back with comments on that. I think one of the interesting things is that when we ask people to comment on the and rate the overall recommendation for the short-range transit plan, it was very positive. There were some people who indicated they were opposed, and when we read the comments from those people, the opposition was because we were not going to Brigham City, we weren't extending later in the evening service, and we weren't adding more frequency. So I think we've addressed those in the plan, but not really as part of your short-range transit plan. So, again, that's the process. We've got to the draft. The next step is if you accept this or as is or have some direction for us to make edits to it, we'll do that and present a final back to you. So in terms of the plan, I'm only going to show you the routes where we've actually made some recommendations. So this is Route 1. Our recommendation there is not changing where the route runs, but taking the additional peak service bus off this route. So right now, during peak times, you have 15-minute service on Route 1, and shift that bus over to Route 4. And with an additional bus there during peak times, we'd have service every 10 minutes on Route 4. Part of that is, again, we needed to increase capacity between the downtown transit center and the university campus. But we looked at it where the demand will be increasing is with the new housing that's along Route 4, and so we're shifting and adding capacity there. It adds capacity to campus on both routes, and they tend to work together, I think, as we looked at that and the ridership. So it's a shift really from this route to Route 4, but increasing the overall capacity between downtown at the transit center and the university campus. The next route where we propose to change is what is operated currently now is Route 3 and 10, and the recommendation is to eliminate the Route 3 portion of that. That's what's shown in gray. Serves the Cliffside area. Very low ridership. When you look at the numbers, 3 and 10 are typically grouped. It doesn't look as bad as what 3 is. 3 really pulls those numbers down, and so our recommendation is to discontinue that portion of it, maintain what is shown as Route 10, the route in blue on this map. The next change we had is Route 4, again, just showing that alignment, but I've already addressed that. We're increasing frequency there, peak period, as well as recommending some Saturday service on this. A big part of that being because of the off-campus student residential housing that's been added there. The next change we have is Route 5. Really minor changes at the north end of this route to serve the new high school. It will provide service there. We've had the discussion that it may not see a lot of ridership because the school district boundaries for that school are oriented more east-west, but at least we're getting there and providing service for that new school. Then Route 8, we're not changing the alignment on this. We did look at options for that, and what we found is that it's really serving the employment centers, the businesses out in this area where we are now. We couldn't shorten it up or change the alignment to improve it, but the recommendation is to move to having this as peak service only, because the overall ridership is not great on this, but that is because the people are riding during peak periods, and you're then continuing to run it throughout the day with very low ridership during that off-peak time. And so we thought it's probably more appropriate to reallocate resources from this, at least in the short term. Longer, this may be a route that you look at restoring again as development occurs out here on the west side of the community. There may be need for additional service in the future, but right now there are places that need those resources more than this route does during the midday. Then Route 11, we basically changed the alignment on this. The challenge here is because of amount of time it takes to run that route, and so we've shortened it up. We continue to serve much of the area served by Route 11, but you can see that the portion shown in gray would not be served by this route, but we pick it up, as you'll see, with recommendations on Route 14 in particular. So, and this is Route 14 currently goes down to Millville, operates peak only. The Millville portion has very low ridership, and so we've recommended shortening this route so it doesn't go to Millville but serves Providence. We cover more of Providence, and we pick up those areas that we've taken off Route 11, so that it continues to have service in that area. And our recommendation for Millville is that during peak periods, you implement a general public demand response service. So it works very much like your call a ride, except you can set specific requirements. There's not the requirements with American Disabilities Act that really specify what you have to do with your call a ride service. So the recommendation would be that this general public demand response, the person calls in, but it's only available within the designated area in Millville and only at the designated peak times, because Route 13 will continue to serve Millville and Hiram in the off-peak period. And we think that's a, even though demand response is an expensive type of service, if you're only doing one or two people a day, it's lower cost than running a fixed route bus there, either through the entire peak period or even all day in some cases. And so it maintains service for those who need it, but I think a more cost-effective approach than running your fixed route bus there on a regular basis. So we've recommended that change, and with that restructuring and shortening, we can pick up the area covered currently by Route 11, shorten Route 11 so it can stay on time and people can meet their transfers. And then the final route change that we have is on 16, and this was in response to comments we heard was that people commuting in from the north, and you saw one of the gentlemen, and he was one that actually talked to us at the transit center, we were down there, come in instead of having to transfer to go up to campus, if that bus would continue through. So it'd come to the transit center, people who are headed downtown or other locations could transfer or go in that immediate area, but the ones going to campus would not have to physically transfer the bus. They could stay on and ride up to campus, and that has been an issue for those people because they come in on 16, and then if you look, Route 1 and Route 4 are already heavily used, and buses can be full, and getting off, you have a seat, and now you don't have a seat, and just for really a very low cost, improving the service for those people who are commuting a long distance into Logan and particularly up to the campus. So this is the overall system. A lot of routes don't have changes. As we looked at them, we did look in some cases, should we make modifications? But routes that are performing well, we don't want to change those. They're doing well. The ones probably 1 and 4 where they're doing well, but the issue there is capacity and needed capacity. We've addressed that. But many of the other routes are doing well, and we don't want to cause changes that might have people move away. And overall, it works together as a system. And so as we put these recommendations together, we've also looked at what things will work together. And so at the point where you reach implementation on these things, you may or may not want to implement all of the recommendations. But one of the things that as you look at specific recommendations to be implemented, you'll have to rely on your staff to really look at that and determine what the implications are for making one change or not making one change for the rest of the system, because we've looked at buses being interlined where they're on one route, they come to the transit center, they go to another route, how to do that during peak periods and really make the system work together. And so whatever actions you do decide to implement out of the plan, that obviously is going to be an issue, because you can't run a bus for a half an hour and just let it sit half an hour with nothing else to do. That will cost you virtually as much as if the bus goes somewhere. So you will have to rely on staff as you put actual recommendations in place. The other things in terms of recommendations, I've already mentioned the general public demand response. We've also recommended that you start implementing a van pool program. This is particularly effective for commuters and those who may not work shifts that fit with your bus schedule. So some of the employers that have shifts that are outside your schedule, evening shifts, van pool can be very effective and it has a lot of flexibility. And so we've recommended that as part of your overall service. And then in terms of the long-range plan, you can see these were the things people commented about that they didn't like with the short-range plan because we weren't doing them, but with the budget constraint, the money is not there to do these plus what you're doing. And as we looked at performance on these other changes, they really are not as effective as what you're doing right now. And so we don't think it makes sense to take resources away from the service that you have now to do any of these. However, they clearly are desired by the community, and I think you should be considering them for long-range implementation and looking, you know, in the future if you have funding to do those. Really, these would be priorities to consider. And so with that, my presentation, and I'll answer any questions you have.
I don't know, maybe you can clarify it. But why do you need to provide bus service to new high schools when they have their own bus system? I don't know what the justification is behind that.
Well, part of it is they don't bus everyone within that area served by that school. And you look at your other schools, you're getting ridership, and whether you would run a separate route or not probably is really a question for you as a policy matter. But as we looked at this and talking with staff, minor changes could be made to serve that new high school. We did get comments from the public that they want to see the school served. And that, particularly that school, can be done with easily with a minor change on that one.
I think also, Jeff, what we look at is trip generators. Where is there congestion for cars? Where are there trip generators for passengers? And schools typically have a lot of congestion with parents dropping off or picking up their students. And so that's what we look at. But to that, I think that's a very valid point. We don't provide school bus service, and we're precluded federally from doing that. And so we have to look at, is it a trip generator? So that's something that we're going to be looking at to see. I mean, if the trips aren't there, if the congestion's not there, then it probably doesn't make sense, you know. So it really comes down to that. I think it's a very good question.
Are there other comments or questions? We'll go back to Sean then. Oh, Eric, go ahead, please, sir.
Can everybody hear me? So I just had a question concerning about doubling up on Route 4. Sean made a comment last meeting that maybe look at it a little bit more, where most of Route 4 is within what we consider which we consider an acceptable walking distance. Okay. So a majority of these kids walk maybe a block to two blocks and they can be on the Aggie shuttle. I mean, even faster than take them for the bus. So I'm wondering if, so we wouldn't be cutting the service for them, they'd still have access to a Aggie shuttle, but would we provide better service maybe if we use that to maybe do later evening service, which is a higher requested thing, where we're not, you know, we wouldn't be precluding these kids, like if they miss a bus, even right now, they just walk up a block and jump the Aggie shuttle, which takes them up there. You know, so most of that's a 1 to 2 block where we might take that money or that route to add more service like later evening, something to provide more service where these people aren't getting anything, where it wouldn't be taken away from the students on Route 4.
I can address that, I think. As we looked at counts of passengers on the buses, Route 1 and Route 4 both were routes that during peak period had overloading conditions on the buses. And that's occurring between the transit center and the campus. So in that corridor between the hub and campus, we saw the need for additional capacity. One of the options we looked at was adding another route, or another bus rather, on Route 1. increasing capacity there. But then we also looked at the fact that she said that the residential housing is near campus, but if we're running the bus by there, we're going to have that demand occurring. And so it's a question of, do we put it on one or four? And as we looked at it, high frequency on four would address the capacity issues between the hub and the campus. It addresses that growing capacity, even though, yes, they are, you know, not that far off campus, far enough that they're going to be out there wanting to get on the bus, which I think would exacerbate the problem if we didn't have the capacity there. The other is that they'll be living there, but not going only to the campus. And that led to why we've suggested Route 4 operate on Saturdays as well, because they'll be going other places in the community, although they're living in residential student housing right off campus. Campus isn't their only destination. So those are, as we looked at it, kind of a combination of factors that led us to that.
Thanks. Any other questions for AT?
How,
or us?
I know that you made changes in 1 and 4, and you said it was because of on-campus housing. Have you factored in the large complex that is scheduled to go on board in a year? On 10th North and 60s?
It was the off-campus housing.
Yeah, 10th right, North and 60s.
That's what we're
60s.
Talking about, the off-campus housing that's coming in on that corridor. And that was a major factor.
Okay, because that's not due to come on board for another year.
Right. Although I think the one is open and the other one is still under construction, will be coming on.
Right. And then the first one that's open is doubling its size.
Yeah.
So.
So those were major considerations as we looked at it.
But they are only a block from campus. I agree with Eric.
Get those little legs moving to those students, right?
So
those of you that are neophytes to this process, not Nephites, we're not in church, neophytes, this is the third one I've had the privilege of going through. As the plan is completed, you know, we can all get a copy of the entire plan, and I'd suggest you all do it and keep it. It's fascinating to look back at these plans. It's like a time course study. You can see as problems and responses develop, you know, over 5-year windows, and it helps you get a better perspective. I'd also encourage you all to be very savvy about these routes, especially those that affect your constituency, to the point where you're ready to tell Todd good ideas you have. Not that he wants us to do that, but then you'll know that you know the routes well enough. That is where the rubber meets the road. So back to the plan. Once this plan is completed, which it is now, we are supposed to approve that process that is completed. Then we have this plan that we can use should we choose to. We don't have to implement it wholly or even partially. We never implement it wholly. We never have, so it's not an all or none deal. But as the time comes, we will meet and talk, maybe some or all of us, over the next months and years, to say, okay, should we fix these problems? Should we implement these as they are, or should we do further studies? Usually, I'd say 90% of the time, we have to do further studies and adapt them to our specific circumstances. So if there are recommendations that get you really excited or cause you heartburn, when the time comes, please speak up and be a part of it, and you will be heard, and it affects it. So that's a good thing. So what we need to do tonight then is just, and everyone has their own favorite wording, but basically we're not approving the implementation of this. We're approving that the report is done, and that the LSC associates have done what they were contracted to do and have all the reports for us, and so that we have that document that we can use now.
Let me express gratitude to Mr. Stoddard for your excellent work, for your experience and expertise, and all the effort you put into this. So thank you very much. We appreciate that. I'll just mention quickly, one of the things that you indicated was a possible need pointed out with the surveys and the responses, the Cache Valley Transit possible link to Brigham City and Utah Transit Authority. I think I mentioned this a couple months ago, but there's a little separate planning effort ongoing there with Utah Transit and Box Elder County elected officials, and we've had some staff from Bragg, Bear River Association of Governments involved, Todd's involved. So there is a planning effort there, trying to look at the need, the resource, how that could be addressed. So that's still a process in the works, which we'll hear more about later, I think. So it's good to know that people are concerned about that. So are we ready for a motion then? Would you like to make that motion?
I would like to make the motion that we approve this short-range transit plan report as being completed.
Accept it.
You receive it. However, we let's I have to. I guess I have to choose a word. That we accept the transit plan is completed.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion? Oh, we do have a little discussion. Yes,
so
please, Deborah.
This stimulates some thinking. I live in the Cliffside neighborhood. I still have an opportunity to have discussions with. Okay, that's a.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know, because I may introduce that opportunity to the community.
Well, let's clarify with our general manager. So before you implement any of these changes, will you at least share with us what you plan to do and why?
For sure. And I think the board has every right that, let's use Cliffside as an example because it's been brought up, that even though we've met the federal obligation and our local obligation for public input, the board may say, well, on this particular case, we want more public input, and so we're going to specifically target the folks of that area and get them to come and give us even further public input before we make any changes, or if we do make changes. So the opportunity still exists for us to engage the public.
Can I ask a question? I understand that there is a route at River Heights, kind of midway. There's a stop there, right?
There's one at City Hall, yeah. There's just a route that goes up there.
Okay, and that that kind of connects to Mountain Road. Is that stop near Mountain Road?
I'd have to pull out my map. It's been a while. Still.
Okay,
I can show you the map afterward, or if we can talk about that, or is it?
Because I
think
Mountain
that Road on going up Cliffside. I know.
I'm kind of thinking there may be a way to have a conversation about those who use it could possibly get down close to that area on bicycle or walking. But, you know, there's a little park there. And maybe there's a way, and either maybe it can come up a little bit closer. I don't know. We'll talk later.
If the board, again, what we hope is you're accepting the plan, but that you give us policy direction and we can come up with alternatives that may be similar to this or may be different. But, again, I think AT has done what he's been tasked to do, given us their recommendations from a professional level. We can, again, still modify, change, or implement as they are.
So those details we'll probably get to and have an opportunity
thank
to comment
you.
On later. So
and all but the small changes actually have to go to the board for approval. So if it affects more than a certain percentage of the route, and also all but the small changes usually only happen August of every year because of the massive amount of stuff that's involved that you guys wouldn't believe. So, you know, nothing's going to happen really, really fast.
We'll proceed to vote then. All in favor of the motion to receive or accept. What did we say? What word did we accept the plan, short-range plan? Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you very much. So next on the list is consideration for adoption of general manager's interpretation of policies. Mr. Natale.
Craig and I had a discussion with our consultant about handling some of these things. And that from our last meeting, we discussed reasonable interpretation. And the way this is to be done is that the policy would be emailed to you along with a link to a monkey survey. Okay, and then there's a series of questions in the survey that you would look at and evaluate the policy, Todd's or general manager's interpretation. Again, against what we say the policy is. And we, as individuals, determine whether or not this is a reasonable interpretation. And then we collect all the comments back from the monkey survey and bring it back to the board, and then we as a board discuss the issue. We go over all the comments. And then we come to a consensus as to if this is a reasonable interpretation, because we might say, well, on policy 1.0, yeah, we all agree that 1.01 is okay, 1.02 is okay, but 1.03 generated a whole lot of discussion. You know, so we focus on 1.03. And we determine whether or not his interpretation meets what we think it ought to be. Because once we've established our policies so that we accept any reasonable interpretation that he has, and that's what we're looking for. And so once we get those back, once we get that achieved, then Todd can run and operate. And then he provides, I didn't bring it with me, that great big thick thing that I got that showed his 2 pages of interpretation and 4,000 pages of interpretation or supporting data. Okay? So if we say this is a reasonable interpretation, then we sit back and then we look at the data and we say, does the data support the conclusion or our reasonable interpretation? And if it doesn't, then we say, no, you didn't make it. Go back and do it again. This isn't the gotcha. Please, don't look at this as, oh, you screwed up, so we're going to hang it. No, this is where we come together and work together. So what I would like to do, we already have the link. Susan has helped us establish the links for all of the policies. So we can take 1.0 and 2.1, and you've got these already, and then we'll just send you out the monkey survey so that you can go in, and there's a series of questions to help get you thinking, and then just answer.
So, Ron, when do you anticipate us receiving that, and when do you want it back?
I need to get with Todd because Susan went to do something, and it
didn't work.
It ran into an issue where it didn't exactly cross borders like it was supposed to. So there's a couple things we need to do. And I would like to make sure that we can get this out to you by Monday.
Okay.
And then I'd like to give you a couple of weeks.
So you'd like to be able to discuss it next meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll collect all the responses, and then we'll go over them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions?
Ron, you're adorable. I think it's called Survey Monkey. Not Monkey Survey.
I like Monkey Survey.
I like Monkey Survey.
I feel like a monkey when you call it Monkey Survey.
I like Monkey Survey.
Okay.
I do, through the groups that I work with for the Department of Energy, we get a lot of these survey monkeys, and a lot of us refer to them as Monkey Survey.
Okay.
So I apologize.
Thank you for that clarification. We'll move on then. Thank you, Ron, for that effort, and we'll be seeing more of that and having a chance to respond. Board chair report. I don't have anything to report. Do I? Should I have anything to report? Okay.
We just leave it standing there.
General manager's report.
So I don't have a lot to report. Oh, sorry.
Is Amber here?
She's not.
Okay. So we do have a new board member that we would have sworn in from Millville, but she is not with us this evening. Her name is Amber Slight. Okay, go ahead, General Manager.
So, at the back of your packet, I just wanted to make you aware, every 3 years we have what's called a triennial review, and I've created a little report here so that you have the actual copy of the review, some slides, so I just quickly go over it, but then you can read through the whole thing later. So there's 17 areas areas that we're evaluated on with regards to federal process. And the FTA hires independent contractors. And one of the challenges is they change every 3 years. So we always have a different reviewer. And also every review, there's different areas of focus I guess you could say, it seems to be. But so we just completed that. It's quite an extensive process. They first do what they call a desk review, where we send them literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents. They review it, and then they focus, here's areas that we need to do further focus, and then they come spend several days with us on site looking at mostly documents, but vehicles, other things, facilities. In our particular review, there were a total of 5 deficiencies found. They were in 3 areas. If you look, I've included some FTA slides from a presentation they did. So this slide with the map, it just shows you across the country what the average number of deficiencies are. So in Utah, the average number is 6. We had 5, so you know we're in that range of the average in the state. And then if you go to the next slide, the top 6 areas by finding, our three areas of findings, again, 5 findings, 3 areas, were the top 3. So it was procurement, ADA, and DBE. So again, that seemed to be a focus this year. So again, just for clarification, procurement's obviously purchasing things and how we go about doing that, following the federal requirements. ADA is Americans with Disability Act, you know, and how we comply with that with regards to passing information along, things of that nature. And then the DBE is disadvantaged business enterprises. So we're required to have certain goals for working with disadvantaged businesses, which is a minority or women-owned businesses, and how we go about doing that. So there's requirements, and so that's where the findings were. None of these findings were majorly significant. We're not in jeopardy of losing federal funding. We had no repeat findings. That's always what they're looking for, is there a pattern? There's always going to be findings. I'm just here to tell you there's always going to be findings, but there's no repeat findings, and we've already corrected most of them. We will very easily correct them in the time frame that we're given to correct those. I will tell you that rarely do we challenge any of the findings. This year we did. We felt that the DBE finding was not warranted. Just what the finding was is we had already set our goal, gone through that process. It had been approved by FTA. And then later on, so several months later, we had a new opportunity to do some work on something that was funded from a different portion of it was actually funded through the MPO and transitioned to us, but the reviewer felt that we should have gone back and reset our goal, and we said, well, no, it had already been said, it had been approved, that's for future. But again, we challenged that. The FTA sided with the reviewer, so we'll correct it. Easy to do. But the triennial review is at the back after all the slides, so you can go through those in detail. If you have any questions at all, if you know, let me know. Be happy to, you know, do a deep dive with you. So, and if I can't give it to you, I'll let you loose with Curtis, and he'll really go down with the federal ranks with you.
Todd, regarding that DBE requirement, we're a smaller community. We have local vendors of all in all areas, from procurement to marketing services. Do we have to be held to DBE standards of a major metropolitan area when we have people in this valley that are looking for business to serve locally? I mean, it just seems to be a strange requirement.
So I'll tell you 2 things with regards to that. I hope I address what you're referring to. First of all, we can never give local preference. That's actually illegal. So when we're doing a federal project, it has to be an equal playing field, right? So we can never say we have a local firm, we want to use a local firm, we'd love to use a local firm. We can't do that. So we can never give local preference.
How far out do you have to go nationally for bidding?
No, we just have to make sure that we've created an equal playing field. So it just depends on the thing that we're procuring. But for large projects like LSC, the Short Range Transit Plan, yes, we advertise nationally. You know, and then we go through our process and we select the most qualified firm or individual.
And this company was out of Utah? I think.
No, LSC's out of Colorado Springs. Colorado, they're a national company.
National, okay,
they do have a national focus. But that doesn't mean that we don't use local companies. We can definitely use local companies, and again, if they are deemed the one that provides the best value.
We use a local accountant.
Yes.
That
exactly.
Does our audit.
So we can through the process determine that a local company is the best value. You know, and so a lot of times companies that have to travel are going to increase costs, and they may not bring expertise with that necessarily. I mean, sometimes they will. So I just want to be clear on that, that while we do use local companies, we can't give that a preference.
Okay.
So, but the disadvantaged business program is a challenge, and I will say, because the biggest part of the challenge is the information they have to disclose. In order to become a qualified DBE, therefore being registered and therefore being considered, they have to disclose all their personal financial information for the past 3 years. I mean, and so it's very intrusive. And so what we find is we'll find companies locally or companies that would qualify as a DBE, and we say, hey, here's the process. And we'll even try to walk them through that. And when they see what they have to disclose, we don't want anything to do with that. And so we've actually had DBEs that were DBEs, and once they went through that process, they didn't renew. And so our biggest challenge is most of the DBEs are 30-plus miles away, 40-plus miles away. For our big capital projects, so like when we remodel the transit center, we always hit our goal. That's not that hard. It's a big project. But for the daily operations, so a DBE opportunity might be landscaping, you know, maintaining our landscaping or janitorial work. It's going to be really hard for them to come and compete and really be competitive from a price standpoint if they've got to drive 45 miles every day to do that. And so that limits our opportunities. And so our goal is always usually pretty low. Our issue wasn't with that. Our issue was that we had set a goal, it had been approved, and then a new opportunity came. We would have considered that with the future DBE goal setting, but we didn't think we had to go retroactive. And the reviewer felt otherwise, that we should have retroactively gone back and reset that goal. Okay. So that's where that came in. But again, we'll adjust, and it's not that big a deal. Hope I explained that well enough.
So this is additional reading material, if we choose to.
If you choose to.
Okay.
I tried to summarize it in the first couple pages.
That nighttime reading, you know.
Yeah. My part of it's only 2 pages. The report itself is like 17. So. I'm trying to hear what you're saying about summaries.
Okay, any thoughts or comments on that triennial review, which means every 3 years, right? Triennial?
Triennial.
Okay, thoughts or comments? So we know what happened. We trust our staff. If we have concerns, we can discuss it here or talk to Todd. So anything else that we should talk about before we adjourn? All of us are going to be there at 12 noon on Friday at Riverwoods Conference Center.
A question was asked about the dress for Friday. What's your recommendation, Chair, Mr. Chair?
Clothing.
No shorts for the men. No shorts. No. Golf attire, Rich. I don't know. Friday, that's what you wear, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. So I don't know. I'll probably wear a tie and a coat. Just if I can't be good, I'll look good or try at least. So I think just what dressy casual.
The rest of us will dress to compliment you.
Well,
how's
thank
that?
You. I will appreciate the help and need it. So, okay, thanks very much. We'll adjourn the meeting.